Today on Seculo, the FBI purges conservative employees.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jay Seculo.
Hey everybody, welcome to the broadcast. We've got a lot to cover, especially right in the beginning. So one of the significant developments when the Republicans take over the House in early January is going to be the committee membership changes in this regard. The Republicans will now be the chairman of each of these committees. So Jim Jordan, for instance, who is the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, will become the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And he's already laid out an agenda on the appropriateness of investigations. You remember, the previous Judiciary Committee had no problems. Basically, all they did was conduct investigations. Well, Jim Jordan has set out an agenda. And part of that agenda in the Judiciary Committee is going to be the attacks on free speech. Because something we don't view it that way. That was that whole ministry of disinformation, and they called it the ministry of truth. But it was very interesting to listen to what Congressman Jordan, soon to be Chairman Jordan of the Judiciary Committee, had to say about this. Remember the Nina Jankowicz, she was the ministry of truth. Yeah.
That was what she was going to be until they had to remove that, at least off the books, at least remove that department because of so much backlash that came from it.
They even got backlash from liberals. I mean, nobody seemed to like the fact that the government was getting into the what is truth business. And it's fine for the government to have a position on something. What's not fine is the government to basically censor other people's views. Listen to when Jim Jordan was asked about this, listen to what he said.
Are you going to subpoena the former DHS disinformation chief, Nina Jankowicz? And if so, why?
Yeah, no, we will. Look, I don't want to get into who, but we have an investigative plan that we think is important to get after this whole attack on the First Amendment, this whole idea that government is telling, private media, telling social media companies what they can and can't put on their network. We think that is wrong. We think that's an attack on the First Amendment. And the idea that you had the government setting up a disinformation governance board when, in fact, the biggest purveyor of disinformation, misinformation, malinformation, whatever you want to talk about, is usually the government.
Then he wants to, in addition to getting on this information, disinformation issue, which I think is very important, Jim Jordan also, Logan, is talking about what appears to be a situation within the Federal Bureau of Investigation purging conservative employees, especially whistleblowers.
Yeah,
and a warning came out, remember, to those whistleblowers, don't, speak to the government, to the Congress.
Yeah, don't speak. You have no voice in this situation. But now when their voices are heard and maybe they have a slight conservative leaning or something like that, they're all of a sudden removed. And this is a real issue that he has brought up. This is some conspiracy theory we're throwing out there. This is something that Jim Jordan has come out and say, yeah, this is really happening.
Well, we're actually doing freedom of information requests on that right now and probably will be in litigation with the FBI over it. But what Jim Jordan reiterates, soon to be chairman of the Judiciary Committee, is that protected whistleblowers, and whistleblowers are protected under federal law, suggests that the FBI is engaging in a purge of employees with conservative views by revoking their security clearances and indefinitely suspending these employees, and that many of these people have had to file formal notices of adverse personnel actions, which is how this all comes into play. So look, this is serious stuff. And at the ACLJ, we're going to back Congress on this, but we're also going to do our own investigation through our government affairs team and our government accountability project. And we'll FOIA this. We'll get the government's what they're doing with this and then be able to expose this. And again, we met with members of Congress in our offices. We're going to show that a little bit later in the broadcast.
Yeah, we have a special kind of presentation coming up towards the end of the next segment, so you're going to want to stay tuned if you want to hear portions of that. Hey, our phone lines are back up. I know yesterday we were down. Phone lines are back up. We'd love to take your call. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 to have your voice heard on the air. We're talking about this. If you have other questions and other topics, we'll be happy to take them as well. 1-800-684-3110. Support the work of the ACLJ. Month of December, this is the most important month for most organizations, including us. So we can use your support. Go to aclj.org and make your donation today.
broadcast. And we are taking your phone calls. Phone lines are open today. Yesterday we had a little technical problem. Today we're in great shape. 1-800-684-3110. Now we're talking in these first two segments. We just discussed it, and we're now discussing it again. And that is that what the Judiciary Committee, which will be chaired in this case by Jim Jordan, he's the ranking member now. He will become the chair of the committee. What he plans on the investigative front, because that's a lot, of what these committees do, our investigations.
Yeah, there's a lot of talks also of how this is going to involve Nina Jankowicz, who now we know as of last week also had a file as a foreign agent. She works for an organization out of the United Kingdom. I mean, not exactly. You hear foreign agent, it sounds like a good headline.
Right.
Realistically, she's working. I mean, it is kind of propaganda for the United Kingdom, if you will. That's part of her job. But you have that happen. And let's remember, she was originally the disinformation czar that was going to be coming out of this disinformation, misinformation council that they were creating within the White House. But let's go back, if you want to remember who she was, back just to April, to hear from Nina Jankowicz.
We need the platforms to do more, and we frankly need law enforcement and our legislatures to do more as well. And in other countries, they're looking at this. You know, the UK has an online safety bill that's being considered right now, where they're trying to make illegal this currently, quote, awful but lawful content that exists online where people are being harassed.
So pushing for...
If it's lawful, it's not unlawful.
Right.
If it's lawful... and you don't like it, the price of freedom is you're going to hear things in a constitutional republic that you disagree with.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden now, I want to see where all these, you know, the liberals used to be the pro-free speech group. Not anymore. And it's now only approved free speech. So you've got,
You don't have to like what people have to say.
No.
You speak out against it. You speak
you
more.
You challenge speech you disagree with more speech.
Right. So if you see the situations like what's been happening in the press, even with Kanye and everything that's happened the last couple weeks.
Can we officially say that he is, outrageous.
But the fact people keep putting him on TV is ridiculous. But what I'm saying is none of us are coming out and saying, well, he should be put in jail for saying what he's saying.
No.
But what you're saying is
people shouldn't listen to
we
him.
You respond effectively.
Yeah, I'll respond effectively. I mean, obviously he's an anti-Semite. So if there was any question with Kanye West, there's not a question any longer. Now, having said all of that, let's talk about what this is going to do.
Yeah.
So you heard what she said, you know, it's lawful but awful speech. That means, by the way, pro-life messages are lawful but awful in their view.
Yeah, exactly.
So you got to remember what they're talking about. In their view, a pro-life message is awful speech. It's lawful.
Conservative Christian
but awful.
Points of view.
Oh, the proclamation of the gospel would be lawful but awful.
Yeah.
I mean, I could go down the list of every issue we handle, and they would view it as lawful but awful. For instance, free speech as it relates to our advocacy on behalf of the Jewish state of Israel. They will, because of the social justice for Palestine movement, they will say, oh, no, that's lawful, but it's awful because they're the oppressed or they're the occupier. So you can't do, in a free country, in a free society, you don't do that. We don't allow this kind of government ministry of truth censorship. Let's go ahead and take a phone call, and then I want to get into the next segment of the next aspect of oversight here.
Yeah, Larry's calling from North Carolina on line one. Larry, you're on the air.
Hi, Larry.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a simple question that I've been watching.
Larry, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
The press secretary, Jean-Pierre, just seemingly lie day after day about topics. And no one seems to hold her accountable.
Yeah, people always say this. Look, it kind of goes back and forth. The press secretary's job is to kind of come up with a lot of spin. But it does seem like the obvious untruths, if you will, come more frequently.
Yeah, but the answer to that here is another one. So lying to the press is not illegal. So making a misstatement to the press is not a violation of the law. So they've got their point. They're going to make their point even if the facts are different. But they're sticking to their message. So that's what's happening. For instance, one of the things that Jim Jordan wants to do, which I think is a really good thing, is he wants to have oversight over the Clapper Brennan. Remember, James Clapper and John Brennan, former director of the CIA, was John Brennan, and the former director of National Intelligence was James Clapper. And what happened in that case, if you remember, was that these individuals, along with about 40 others, signed on to a document. In October of 2020, they had left public service, so they were free to do it, that said that the New York Post story about Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation. Now, that's obviously proved to not be true. Jim Jordan wants oversight hearings on how in the world were these guys putting this out there. Again, it's not illegal for them to say it, but it was, you know, this misinformation is not a one-way street. By the way, I don't think you censor these people. That's the difference between someone that really respects the First Amendment's right of free speech and these groups. They want to shut you down. I want to respond with more speech, saying obviously Clapper and Brennan were wrong, which is a little scary considering they ran the CIA and the new director of national intelligence.
Well, then you end up with some sort of, if you do go this way, it ends up almost being like monarch-like, where all of a sudden you can't, you only can print what's good for your propaganda. You're not allowed to say more or do more that has any sort of speech against what is deemed, I guess you'd say, right for, you know, 48 to 51% of the country, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, so I think this is the problem when you start getting into the censorship police. And this is the reality of it. Now, I want to say this. We, just 2 days ago, were in our offices in Washington, D.C., with members of the incoming class from the United States Congress. There were, I think we had about eight of the 10 that were in town. They do them in 2 weeks, 10 and 10. But we also had Senator Langford, Mike Pompeo, our senior counsel for global affairs, obviously former Secretary of State. And like I said, James Langford, the senator, Daryl Issa from Congress, address our group. And our team videoed this, and I think it would be good. I want to play this for our radio audience, but also for those watching on our social media platforms. We want you to see it as well.
Yeah, sort of a highlight reel, so you can kind of see that.
Shows you the scope and nature of what the ACLJ and ACLJ Action actually do, what we get done in Washington, D.C. Take a listen.
I get to introduce Jay Sekulow. He's the chief counsel of the ACLJ, to just kind of show you the scope of the work of the ACLJ, both fighting for life, of course, front and center for us, religious liberty, freedom of speech, but also into this new world where politics and law, we call it lawfare.
For the members, we're here to help. We oftentimes do briefs on cases of the Supreme Court where members of Congress sign on, and that's very helpful to the court. They get cited often. We've had our briefs cited by John Roberts to John Paul Stevens. We have a radio broadcast that reaches about 4.5-5 million people a day, and of course our government affairs team.
I had the honor of serving for 6 years with the late Henry Hyde. And Henry Hyde is known by all of us as a champion for life. And he said, there's no limit to how often you can in fact help a society stand for the importance of life. The life of the unborn, the life of the indigent, the life of the elderly. And a society that does that is a society worth belonging to. Having that message from Henry is one that I want to continue to have next generations understand. We stand for the sanctity of life, the importance of it, because without that, we're not the society we want to be.
And you're here with pro-life organizations, ACLJ, that does amazing work on religious freedoms. Listen to them, learn from them, ask them questions. Take the work that they have been doing here in Washington, D.C. for decades that have given us all this incredible opportunity. Take that on board, learn from them, listen to them, and then work every day.
Father, I pray that you give us wisdom on how to be able to serve you, how to be able to speak in a way that represents you and the best of our nation. God, don't drive us to anger, drive us towards righteousness. Help us in these days. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.
So there you go. That gave you a good overview of what was there. And I want to say something. This gives you a perfect example of what the ACLJ does and is capable of doing. Daryl Issa, I mean, obviously Mike Pompeo and our team, but Daryl Issa was there, member of Congress, was in the Trump administration, then went back into Congress. He is actually he'll be the chair of one of the big subcommittees, because these committees have subcommittees, of the Judiciary Committee. So that the influence level is tremendously high. So he, along with Mike Johnson of Louisiana, congressman, also a friend of ours, signed on to these letters that are going out about the government disinformation, about the what Clapper and Brennan were up to when they signed on to the letter saying this was Russian disinformation. So this stuff is getting public. And I think if you read what, and I'm going to read this, it said Jim Jordan has also released more than 1,000 pages of his committee's investigative roadmap alleging political interference by the FBI and Justice Department based on whistleblower allegations by conservatives within those agencies. So this is where you get to the bottom of this. But let me tell you what it also means. This is where you support the work of the ACLJ. Because as Mike Pompeo said, Ask these members of Congress to use the ACLJ as a resource. We're only a resource because you support our work in Washington, D.C. and around the globe. And without you, it doesn't happen. This broadcast doesn't happen. What we get to accomplish in our work overseas doesn't happen. Our expansion, which is going to be significant, none of this happens without your support. So I want to encourage you. We're in a matching challenge. Logan's going to let you know what to do here. Support the work of the ACLJ in our most important month of the year, December.
Yeah, it is also a matching challenge as well this month, but it is also the month of December, which, as you know, for a lot of reasons, this is when a lot of donations come in, whether it's people trying to see what they can do at the end of the year, but we also know this is a very tough time for people. But if you do have the ability, you can do it right now. Go to aclj.org. All donations effectively doubled. So I know I've said a lot, but $10 becomes $20 and so on and so on. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the broadcast. You know, yesterday we had a segment with Professor Harry Hutchinson, who's a law and economics professor and studies the economy significantly, and we were talking about what might happen. And well, here's what happened. So payroll increase and the job increase for the month, unemployment rate was 3.7%, but the job increase, Harry, was 263,000, which was not anticipated. And then you said also wages increased significantly as well. This was coming the day the same morning, and we got the obviously this information today, but the same morning, we had the head of the Fed saying, hey, we're going to ease up on the interest rate increases because things are slowing down.
Absolutely.
Well, apparently not.
Yes. And so one of the things that listeners are probably interested in is what is the source of the Fed chairman's economic data?
Yeah.
Because yesterday, we were told that job growth was slowing significantly. The expectation was that job growth would be about 127,000 for the month of November. Now we are told that job growth was relatively robust, approaching 300,000 jobs for the month of November. Based on the preliminary report, Fed Chairman Powell suggested that they were going to slow the rate of interest rate increases. In other words, they were going to move off of their monetary policy of tightening the economy so much. Now, I think the Fed will resume its current trajectory, which is 75 basis point increases for the foreseeable future. That means mortgage rates are likely to rise, overall interest rates are likely to rise, but the economy may hum along a bit until it hits a wall. Why? Because wage increases continue to rise.
Okay, but here's what I do not understand in all of this. How did the head of the Fed not have this information 48 hours ago so that they make these projections? They end up being wrong. He announces we're going to slow down the rate increases. And now he probably, because of the way everything's reacted, they probably will not slow down the rate increases. And well, that changed in 48 hours.
It's a very good
it's
question.
Scary.
And not that the inspector generals throughout the government don't have enough work, but it may call for a bit of an investigation, partly because he has essentially misled the markets. And so if you look at the market swings between, let's say, Tuesday of this week and today, a significant number of people have lost a significant amount of money in reliance on advice given by the Fed chairman. Now, he will certainly claim that he wasn't giving investment advice. But I think it's very problematic for the American consumer. And it's very problematic for the American employer. Why? Because there are tons and tons of jobs outstanding which have not yet been filled, and that may continue to fuel wage increases.
We actually have a clip from President Biden from just this morning, kind of doing a little bit of a victory lap on what is happening with the economy and giving everyone an update. Let's hear that, Bite 17.
As we go into the holiday season, here's what this all means. The Americans are working, the economy is growing, wages are rising faster than inflation, and we've avoided a catastrophic rail strike. It means our plan to build the economy from the bottom up and the middle out. You're tired of hearing me say that, but it's working. And the wealthy are still doing very well while the middle class and the poor are having a shot. I want to thank Congress once again for being partners today, for averting this disaster and keeping our economy on a stable footing during the holiday season.
And the disaster
Thank you, Congress, for averting a disaster.
Yeah, a disaster. The disaster being the rail strike.
Yeah, which would have been.
Total disaster. So I'm glad they averted the rail strike. The problem is they're pitching a narrative. Now, the truth is, for most people, okay, if gas prices continue to drop, and people don't care, Harry, why it's dropping. They just want to know it's dropping. If food prices,
I don't even know if people are following it enough to know why.
Well, you were following it when it was $5.50 and $6 a gallon, but at $2.99, you may not be.
You're breathing a little bit easier.
Yeah.
I think that is correct. I think most Americans are happy to see gas prices come down. But the bad news is overall inflation may resume its upward climb. In part, as I suggested yesterday, the rail settlement is indeed inflationary. That's number one. Number two, the federal government had tools in its basket of tools to stop the rail strike for at least 80 days without intervention by the United States Congress. So I think we should be happy that there's no rail strike, but we should also be aware of the fact that the settlement and the terms of that settlement may indeed be inflationary.
What would have happened if they did strike? What would be the impact on the economy?
Well, first, the president could invoke a law
for
80 days,
right,
and require the parties to continue to bargain. That's number one. Number two, one would hope that the unions would come to their senses. Keep in mind that 8 out of the 12 unions had already agreed to the deal. You had 4 holdouts, and that was holding things up.
I think people forget that because we talked about the rail strike and the fact that they had come together just a couple months ago, I think it's when it was. So when people are hearing this again, I think there is some confusion. They're going, wait, didn't we just get through the rail strike? And that was that the majority had said yes, but the biggest players hadn't necessarily all come to the agreement.
Correct. And the unions have a lock on this.
They do, but they also have a significant lock, if you will, on the Democrat Party.
Yes.
And so the president did not want a rail strike before the midterm elections hit.
Yeah.
Now that has been pushed off to the margins. And
that student loans cancellation goes away. That happens a week after. A lot of things happen right after a midterm.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah. And, well, the Supreme Court's reviewing that. I mean, there's a lot going on, by the way. We talked to you yesterday. The Supreme Court's got a lot on the plate. We've got one up there now involving a prayer case that's out of Florida, but affect every single establishment clause religion case in the country. If we can get this reversed at the Supreme Court, I mean, the ramifications are that significant. So, you know, we're looking at a victory there. We hope they hear it. That's number one. That's the plan. So we've got that going on. By the way, we also have an argument next Tuesday at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit. We've got another one coming up in the 11th Circuit. And we just filed a brief in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit on a pro-life case. So as we end this first 30 minutes of the broadcast, understand the scope and nature of when you're supporting the ACLJ, what it means. I mean, you have seen the scope and expanse of the work as it continues to grow. A lot of you listening to this broadcast every day or watching our broadcasts on our social media platforms, supporting this broadcast is part of what you do. That we can get to this kind of information every day. Logan and Jordan have also started the Secular Brothers podcast 3 times a week. So it's another basically almost 3 hours of content additionally produced. So, of course, all the special things. We just rolled in the one about our project in D.C. So support the work of the ACLJ. We're in a matching challenge campaign. December is the month. Now, the matching challenge is the same as always. Whatever you donate, we get a matching gift for. But I encourage you to go to ACLJ.org because we determine our budget based on how things end on the very last day of this month. And I was just on a call with a couple board members this morning discussing this because we've got major initiatives we are launching. So ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Very first segment of the broadcast, we talked about what's going to happen when Jim Jordan becomes the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And they've talked about the investigative track they're going to go on. It's going to be, why did all these national intelligence officials from former the Obama administration, Clapper, Brennan, sign on to this, you know, the Hunter Biden laptop was nothing but Russia misinformation. We're going to find out about this misinformation board and this Ministry of Truth they were basically trying to set up, and what's going on at the FBI regarding purging conservative employees. And we've got, in simultaneous with the Congress doing that, we have a series of Freedom of Information Act requests that we've put out through our legal efforts with our government accountability project. So all of that is happening simultaneously, which is very, very good. But we've got calls coming in, and I think we should take them. 1-800-684-3110.
Yeah, we do have some lines open again at 1-800-684-3110. But Bill, in Wyoming, you're on the air.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, appreciate you guys answering our questions.
Sure.
I have one. Since the Republicans are taking over the House, would that mean that they would be able to defund some of this extraneous government regulations and departments that they've got? You were talking about the Department of Disinformation as an example. Would they be able to do things like that?
Sure. The House originates the spending bill. So if the House says no spending and they can't get it through, it's done. For instance, one of the first things that needs to be attacked is the 85,000 new IRS agents. The IRS is institutionally incapable of self-correcting. And I know that because I litigated against them on behalf of conservative groups, pro-life groups, a couple of years back. I went through that litigation. We won. We were successful. But as soon as a new administration came into power, boom, they were at it again. Now, we went back and fought back, and our friends and other organizations are doing the same thing. But we've got cases right now we're dealing with this. So you got to keep fighting. But the funding and the spending does come out of the House of Representatives. So they could say, we're not going to fund the IRS, the billions of dollars they wanted for these additional IRS agents when they can't answer their customer service lines as it is. And you're still faxing them information.
Yeah. You still are faxing. I've tried. I've done it recently where just trying to get an EIN for an LLC. They were like, hey, sorry, you know, we're because of a slight confusion, you're going to need to fax this and we'll get back in touch with you in 90 days. And you can just kind of imagine these papers stacking up as you try to, one, figure out how to fax, and two, imagine just the deep dive people have to do to actually get to your forms again. And these are the problems that are happening right now. And a lot of people are feeling it. Again, we encourage you to call in. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110.
Yeah, I'm coming up in the next segment of the broadcast. Our senior counsel for global affairs, Mike Pompeo. Yeah. Very interesting new article he's got up. It's called Randy Weingarten and the Teachers Union Threatens America's Future.
Yeah, we talked about the rail union. Now we're moving to the teachers union.
Yeah, because it's dynamic of what's happening, and we need it. We're going to talk about this. Listen, I don't say this. You know, I think we're starting to see the fallout from the closures of the schools during COVID to the point where now you're starting to see real impact on this and on a whole host of issues. And I think we're just coming to grips with what the Chinese allowed to happen in the United States.
Yeah, I mean,
and around the globe, actually.
There's concerns of states still enacting some of those, virtual schooling and those kind of things.
Yeah, well, they're threatening it again.
It's still on the horizon for a lot of people. And Dr. Fauci came out and said, I'm not saying it should,
but they might.
But I'm saying, but yeah, I'm not going to say no. And obviously, if you live in certain states, you're pretty much probably going to be okay. Likely that's not going to happen again if you live in a more red state. But if you live in some of these deep blue states.
New York City said we don't want to close our schools.
Most people are not going to do it anymore. They've seen, like you said, the damage from it and what it all really caused to a lot of our kids. So I don't think you're going to see it in mass anymore. It's just like when California, they almost remasked and then they backed off of it at the last second. You know, they're tempting at it again right now. So we'll see.
We are going to take your calls, and we're going to let the lines of Friday, so you're going to be able to ask a question on any topic. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Logan, you put your hand up when I said any topic.
I will just say, be kind to the phone screener. Not every topic is a topic we're going to cover, but if it's a topic that you think could be even controversial, or even if it's just a comment that's on a topic, please don't say any bad words. Please don't say that, because then you're not going to get on the air. Give us a call. Be kind to the phone screener. 1-800-684-3110. Next segment, though, Mike Pompeo. We'll do the calls at the very end. Be right back.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. As we said, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We're going to let you talk about a lot of topics, but we are joined right now by our Senior Counsel for Global Affairs, the 70th Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. Was with the Secretary just 48 hours ago in Washington, D.C. We were talking to new members of Congress, and Mr. Secretary, always a pleasure to have you on. Now, you were in Georgia yesterday, correct, or was that today?
No, I didn't get down to Georgia. I wasn't able to make it, but I am very confident that turnout's going to be fantastic these last few days, and that we're going to end up with a 50th United States Senator Herschel Walker.
Yeah, look, it's very close. I mean, it's going to we'll see how it plays out. You have a brand new article up at ACLJ.org, and we just played a little bit of a during our break for our social media on and saw a clip of what's going on, and it's entitled "Randy Weingarten and the Teachers Unions Threaten America's Future," and in it you assert that the America's educational system is in need of fundamental change. So, I mean, I see a lot of things fundamentally wrong with the system, but I think coming from you, you CIA director, member of Congress, Secretary of State, what's your sense of what this is?
So, Jay, you've engaged in this. The ACLJ has done remarkable work in protecting parents' rights and kids for an awfully long time. But the onslaught is real, and the left has been at this for 40 years. And the article I wrote was about the teachers unions and the fact that they have created this cartel that has taken away power from parents to educate their kids. Parents saw that during COVID. I think they got to look inside the black box. And as I see it, and I watch this next generation being walked away from the central ideas of real history, basic civics, math, science, all the things that have built this most exceptional nation. I worry about Xi Jinping. Vladimir Putin's a bad guy. But if we don't teach our kids that America is an exceptional nation, this republic truly is at risk. It could fall from within, Jay, as surely as our founders feared.
You know, the indoctrination is incredible. I did see one ray of hope, though, in the election in the midterms, and that is local school boards. Parents took control. I will say parents are taking control of their school boards. And that's a positive, Mike. I think that's a positive development.
It's real. It is grassroots. It's not driven from Washington, D.C. I saw it, Jay, when I was out for 12, 13 months campaigning for candidates. I'd have folks come up to me and say, Mike, I'm going to run for school board. I don't even know where the school board meetings are held, but I'm going to do this for my kids, for my grandkids. We won lots of people who believe in basic ideas about American greatness, people who understand that we should empower parents to make good decisions, people who want school choice, kids to be able to go where their parents think they can get their best education. We were very successful at school board races all across America. And I think this is something that was underreported.
Yes.
But enormously important and good for the country.
You know, it's interesting, Logan. I think parents have, after the lockdowns of COVID and after some of the stuff that was going on at school boards, I think parents have been reawakened. I always used to say the most important race oftentimes is a school board.
Yeah, I think that they have definitely seen what happened. And I think a lot of it was, like I said, from the lockdowns, not just the lockdowns being the fact that the kids weren't in school, but maybe parents were starting to observe even what was going on virtual schooling. I remember when our kids went to virtual schooling, they specifically said, you know, in our school they didn't, but in other schools in the area, they said, you know, don't listen in.
Don't let the parents listen in.
If your parent is there, tell your parents they shouldn't be listening in. Tell them not to be in the room while you're during virtual schooling. And I think that all of a sudden awoke a lot of people to go, wait, what? Why would that even be a question? Well, you know, I wasn't planning on it anyway because I got to do my work virtually. But now you've opened the door, and then they started hearing what was coming out of these teachers' mouths, what was being taught to their kids, the good and the bad, and realizing they really realized what was happening.
And Mike, I think the teachers' unions, in large part, were the motivating force on why they did not want to have parents listening in when school was being done virtually.
Remember who was talking to the president and to Democrat governors? It was the teachers unions all across America, state level in Kansas, the Kansas Teachers Union, all across America. They were the ones telling them, we're not going to send these kids back. Don't let parents know what it is we're teaching them. When the teachers unions showed up at school board meetings, they told these other parents, no, you're the problem, not the solution. And so it was absolutely the case. Look, this has been true for an awfully long time. The teachers unions lost their focus on educating kids, and their focus became protecting the least best teachers amongst them. I have a brother-in-law, a sister who are both public school teachers, have been for 20, 25 years now. good people trying just doing their best to teach kids the things that matter most to them. And the unions sit on top of that structure and drive a union mentality, a cartel mentality through the system that prevents the most fundamental teaching from actually taking place. It's really dangerous.
We talk about your role as Secretary of State and also your role as Director of the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA. When we think of the future of our country, is the education system part of national security?
Oh, my goodness. The article I wrote talks about the fact that we're not in the top 10 in teaching our kids math, teaching them science, teaching them English. We're behind countries you couldn't even dream we'd be behind. And Xi Jinping and Chairman Kim and the Taliban, they can all see it. They are fanning it. They talk about an American decline. We can't permit that to happen. If we don't have technologists that are world-class, if we don't have people who can write and make arguments and present real history, if we won't defend our Judeo-Christian heritage, the fundamentally most important documents in the world, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, right behind the Bible, if we won't defend these things that matter so much, then yeah, I was the 70th Secretary of State. The 74th, 75th, 76th Secretary of State won't have a prayer if we don't get it right in our schools at home.
President Biden received more money from teachers' union than any other candidate in the 2020 election cycle, that included during the campaigns. Are they in such lockstep that breaking this cabal is going to be difficult?
Yes. Look, I think some of the Democrat leaders know better, but they can't break away from the union money and the union influence. Make no mistake. The unions are out in force down in Georgia. We started the conversation there. They're out in force today down in Georgia supporting Raphael Warnock, who doesn't stand for any of the things which I described about how it is we ought to teach our kids and how parents ought to have the capacity to make sure they know what it is their children are learning.
I want to ask you, talk for just a moment here on the situation with Ukraine and Russia and the discussion between Macron and President Biden. Where do you see this going? I mean, we're getting into the second winter of this war.
It's the second winter. It's going to be even tougher than the first one. The good news is the Ukrainian people have demonstrated enormous resolve, but even more broadly than the energy issues that are very real. Putin's gone after the energy infrastructure inside of Ukraine. It's going to be a tough winter in Europe as well, where they're going to have enormously high costs and limited capacity. I see this as being hard. The answer is to compress the time frame, in my view. The best solution is to provide more and deeper set of tools for the Ukrainians to defend themselves from the war of aggression by Vladimir Putin and shorten Putin's window to wreak horror on Ukraine and all of Europe. We can do it. We have the capacity to provide that, and the Ukrainians are prepared to actually use those tools effectively.
We appreciate you, as always, taking time. We appreciate you also coming to our offices in Washington, meeting with these incoming members of Congress. As always, Mike Pompeo, Senior Counsel for Global Affairs. Thanks so much for being with us again, Mike. Let me tell you something, folks. You've got a former Secretary of State as part of the team at the ACLJ. This is, by the way, not the first time we've had cabinet members involved with the ACLJ. John Ashcroft, former U.S. Attorney General, was also part of our Law and Justice Institute, is part of our Law and Justice Institute. So, Rick Grinnell?
Really, when conservative administrations switch over, there are a lot of great people who we look at and say who would be a great person to add to
When you
team.
See the way that staff in Washington is developed, a lot of them are from the previous administration. Mm-hmm. The former Director of National Intelligence, Rick Grinnell, was also a cabinet member. So a lot of this is happening. Now, let me tell you what we're going to do in the next segment. We're going to take your calls on a variety of topics. So our phone lines are open at 1-800-684-3110. One topic we've not yet discussed is the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals ruling yesterday on President Trump's request to keep a special master to review these documents that were taken as part of the search warrant execution at Mar-a-Lago. The 11th Circuit, with a conservative panel, ruled yesterday against the former president. There are not a lot of lawyers that have significant experience with special masters. I have. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to take your calls on other topics, and we're going to do that at 1-800-684-3110. We want to get your reaction to all this. 800-684-3110. I also realize that, and I said this yesterday, for those of you listening in Georgia, let me tell you what's at stake here. It's not, you're right, we're not going to get control of the United States Senate, but you know what happens if Raphael Warnock is reelected, the Republicans lose a seat on the committees. And right now, the committees are evenly divided. And when they're evenly divided, you know what that means? Things can be stopped. I told the members of Congress we met with, your job is block and tackle. And it's the same thing in the Senate when you've got the committees and you can go in evenly. If you don't have it, you're not going to get it. So, again, a lot at stake in Georgia. If you got friends and family in Georgia, call them. We're going to take your calls when we come back from the break. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. And Logan, let's remind everybody about our matching challenge.
That's right. You can join our matching challenge right now by making any donation. So any donation is doubled right now in the month of December. It's also December, which means it's the most important month of the year for donations and to set 2023. ACLJ.org. We'll be right back with your phone calls. 1-800-684-3110.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Let me just quickly say that the special master that was put in place by the district court judge in Florida on the Mar-a-Lago execution of the search warrant by the FBI has now, that case has been dismissed. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit concluded that there was not a basis upon which a special master should be implemented. And then they went one step further and said they're going to hold their opinion for the mandate, which is what it's called, for 7 days. And the lawyers for former President Trump can then appeal it. The appeal would be en banc review of the entire 11th Circuit, not likely to be granted. Supreme Court review. They've rebuffed every attempt he's made to do this. I think the special master is done, but we'll take calls on all these topics at 800-684-3110.
Yeah, we'll be taking some calls, and there's a couple lines open, as you said, at 1-800-684-3110. I know a lot of you have questions about the whole special master situation. If you want to call and question about that, that's fine. Sure. I'd love to hear from you, 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Dimitro, who's calling in line one in Washington. You're on the air.
Hi, Dimitro.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you very much for your hard work. As always, enjoying to hear all the insights from you. I have a very broad question, though, talking about education and about American society in general. I'm a part of a huge Slavic community down here in Vancouver, Washington, and the question that I keep hearing from people over and over again, our society has changed dramatically. Right. You know, I live here for about 17 years, and things that were not allowed and were not acceptable 7 years ago are totally fine today and allowed and acceptable and lawful, you know, in some states, and especially in neighboring states. We are homeschooling and thankful to God for that opportunity. It's great, but a lot of parents can't do that. They don't know English as well as we do, and they're scared for their kids. You know, the things that are being pushed on them by liberal agenda, you know, talking about education and Mr. Mike Pompeo, his opinion on that. And it's just my question to you guys, is it possible to bring America back to normal, sort of speak, you know, back to Judeo-Christian? Because we just had elections, you know, and people are very, very discouraged.
Yeah, well, look, the elections were discouraging.
They were discouraging,
but not on the school board level.
And Dimitro, to your point, I think you're discouraging, but also I think you saw a bit whether you agreed with how people voted or didn't vote, or people kind of saying, hold on, we're not going that far in terms of some of the conservatives that maybe were a bit out there that didn't get voted for,
or the
far left that didn't get voted for. A lot of the more moderate candidates made it through. And look, all of it was at a very razor thin margin. When you really look at it, we are still very, very divided country. So the only way to sort of get back, if you want to say, to where we were even 10, 15 years ago or less, would really be for the American people to put the right people up for office to actually work towards it. There has been that whole conversation we've had of what does personality matter as long as their policies are good? And while I agree with that statement, and I also go, how about we find some candidates that are both like decent in both categories?
Yeah,
there are people out there. There are decent people with good policies out there. They don't have to be one or the other, because when you have this extreme point of view or extreme personality, but maybe you agree with the points of view, it does discourage a lot of these sort of middle of the road voters from getting excited. I think some of that you're happening right now in Georgia with Herschel Walker. I think there's a lot of people, as you saw, Kemp won by a large amount. Kemp is just about as bland conservative as you can be. But you had a more controversial figure with Herschel Walker, and a lot of people did not vote.
Or did not vote 50,000 votes in the first time.
Yeah. So sure, hopefully this time you see a better, but it's an uphill battle.
But let me say where there is hope, and that is at the Supreme Court of the United States. We have the best on judicial philosophy, the best Supreme Court we've ever had. We've got a case that is pending before the court right now. We are filing our last brief on that probably in about less than 10 days. That could radically change in the right way, to go back to what the founders intended on, you talk about Judeo-Christian values of the religion clauses and the First Amendment and freedom of religion. And this idea that, you know, just because you disagree with somebody's religious message, it doesn't mean you get to censor it. That case is pending right now at the U.S. Supreme Court. We will file our last brief in this phase, the certiorari phase, in the next 10 days. So all of that's pending. So I'm not going to lose hope. We're going to take more calls at 1-800-684-3110.
Yeah, it's kind of one of the last calls to get your voice on the air. We'll do our best to take as many as we absolutely can. Let's go to Charles in the state of Georgia. Obviously a big week for the state of Georgia. We got a question kind of unrelated, but it's all right. Charles, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'll try to make this quick. A quick two-parter. Do you anticipate any action or investigations into all the donations that were made by Sam Bankman-Fried to the Democratic candidates?
Yeah, people
including
do.
Including Joe Biden. And the second part is, how do you anticipate any results of any of these investigations to be enforced in light of the state of the DOJ right now?
Yeah,
both good questions. For people who don't know, that's the FTX crisis. I can't tell you that I know all the ins and outs of it, so I'm not going to pretend I do. But as you know, there is some controversy.
What is FTX for people?
FTX is a crypto exchange. You know, it's not its own currency. It was where you'd go. So a lot of people were holding their money in there as well, as that's how they were making their purchases. And with that, they lost a lot of money. There's some pretty clear evidence that there was some fraudulent things happening. I think I don't think that's a controversial statement. So do I think there will be investigations? Absolutely. I think people will be.
Multiple.
Yeah, I think that's coming. And it's a big referendum on what's in the crypto world in general.
Yeah, so the investigations will be threefold. You will have local prosecutors, state prosecutors investigating. Yeah. You're going to have, the DOJ's already looking at it, as you can imagine. So that could be criminal indictments coming if the evidence shows it. And then Congress, because now it's controlled in the House by Republicans, will look at the influence of this, the money being spread around politically, because as the caller said, as Charles said, there's a lot going on there. Is Charles still on the line?
Yep, he's there.
Hey, Charles, so I want to ask you this question. You're in Georgia. Have you voted yet?
Definitely.
Okay. All right.
If people are saying, we have people from Georgia right now commenting, when is the election day?
I mean, for Tuesday.
Tuesday is election day. Now, I don't know if you could still early vote. I'm not sure if early voting
is
still.
Early voting is over with today, I think. Charles, what do you think? How close is it?
Well, unfortunately, even the local media is one-sided. And it's really hard to tell, because there's not a good source of information down here to really determine what's going on. There's so much suppressed, and so it's so one-sided.
Well, we're going to find out. I'll tell you what, we're going to find out soon enough, because the election, for those who don't know, in Georgia, come on, Georgians.
It's Tuesday.
We lived in Georgia a long time. You were born in Georgia. It's Tuesday. So voting would be really good if you haven't already.
Yeah, but I think that can maybe even shows you kind of a general feeling amongst a lot of people right now. But don't let that be discouraging. I do want to thank everyone this week who supported the work of the ACLJ in our last matching challenge of the month of November. But December rolls right into another one. I know that's like, hey, we just ended one. But this is the most important
November and December, the two biggest months of the year for the ACLJ and what it does.
And for all organizations,
yes,
really.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, from retail stores to nonprofits. Yes. What this means is we will determine our budget for next year based on response and donor support this year. Now, I need to say this. You saw the clip from our offices in Washington, what's happening in our government affairs office. In that same office, it's housed ACLJ Action. In the same office, it's held our government oversight project. We're about to expand that office in Washington again this year. So a lot going on there. We've got other projects that are going to be expansive for the ACLJ. Talking about expansive, Jordan and Logan have launched a podcast. It's another three times a week, more content. It's a blast also, I have to say, listening to it.
It's a fun kind of casual listen, but we do talk some very important topics and sort of what's going on in culture, whether that's going on in social media. We talked about Elon Musk yesterday.
Did you talk about Kanye West?
We talk about Kanye. We talk about the Neuralink. We talk about everything. And a lot of great political content as well as pop culture and just culture in general.
So support our work.
Go to secularbrothers.com for that, but support the work of the ACLJ. That's most important right now. ACLJ.org. Make your donation. You don't have to do anything special. All donations are effectively doubled and matched by another donor. So we appreciate that. We're back on Monday.